Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn, and I'm here with Travis Korpening, chair of CFCC's Diversity Committee, and Kent Guyon, UNCW's Diversity Officer. We're talking today about diversity and inclusion on local campuses. Do you see places in the community that could benefit from greater understanding or inclusion? Tell us about it by calling 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. You can also ask a question of our guests and feel free to tweet us at CoastlineHQR. Kent Guyon, before we went to break, we were talking about the benefits, the quantifiable benefits of diversity on campus. And at Georgia Regents University, which is where you were before you came to UNCW, you first tackled cultural competency training to help people understand the role of diversity inclusion and inclusion. That was primarily a health science campus, and we'll get into why that was important to you in a little while. But what would greater cultural competency contribute to the university here?
Sure. So I see cultural competency as a tool that really enhances your skills, your knowledge, and your ability to interact with in cross-cultural situations. Many of the situations that we are dealing with now are workplace. They are working with clients. And really, anytime you touch a person in terms of your career, there's an opportunity for there to be cultural differences. So having some understanding of how you negotiate those interactions is really becoming more and more critical as we go forward. In the world of healthcare, and I'll just jump there for a second, we can clearly quantify health outcomes that are made better when the healthcare providers have cultural competency training in a very objective way, as well as a subjective feeling of better provision of care from the patient's perspective. So there are many, many ways that it can be quantified and has been quantified, and was the reason it was so critical for our university to undertake that as a goal.
So then tell us a little bit about your background. You're a medical doctor with a fascination around epidemiology.
Yes. So I went to medical school thinking I was going to be a pediatrician. And lo and behold, came this thing called epidemiology that kind of put me on a different track. And that was really understanding the importance of looking at population health issues, whereby changes in policies, changes in procedures, and even changes in the trainings that we do for our healthcare providers make impactful, powerful differences to the health of a community. I'll just remind us of the world before seatbelts and how, you know, a simple change in seatbelts have just saved numerous lives with one policy change as an example. So I've been very interested in population health, and especially when there are disparities in population health, looking at solutions as to how to bridge those divides.
Can you give us an example of how a medical doctor with greater cultural competency might help create a better health outcome for someone than versus someone who didn't have that same training? What sort of real-world example can you give us that way?
Okay. I don't want to get too personal, but I can think of a number of times when an interaction with a patient has two really important elements. One is the technical side of what's being delivered, and the other is how the information is being delivered or the approach. So I can remember a patient who was in need of a transfusion and was very uncomfortable about the situation. That patient actually asked if I would call a relative to speak with that relative about the pros and cons of having that particular procedure done. Because of the trust that was gained and because of my knowledge of understanding, you know, who makes the call sometimes in people's medical decision making, I was able to talk and have a conversation that probably wouldn't have happened if I wasn't as aware of that person's background through my own experiences. So it all turned out well. But again, that was an important healthcare decision that was brokered through my understanding of that person's cultural background.
So that is a very clear, quantifiable benefit to cultural competency. When you think about taking that practical application to the campus of, say, UNCW or CFCC, what would that mean in a quantifiable way here?
Sure. So there are actually some pretty good examples already. And one that I kind of direct perhaps some follow-up to is one that was done by the National Association for Partnerships in Equity. They actually looked at some of the school systems in the Dallas-Fort Worth area where there was a gap between science scores for girls and boys. The only intervention that they did was gender equity training of the teachers. And lo and behold, 2 years afterwards, scores for all children in that district went up just based upon gender equity training, not only for the girls, but for the boy students as well. So again, a mechanism by just understanding and having some capacity to know how to work with different groups resulted in clearly more positive test scores. In thinking about a college campus, there are a number of studies that have shown benefits. And if you look at the data that the Supreme Court uses to justify why diversity is a compelling interest, you can find it. So I'm not quite sure why the gentleman spoke about not having quantifiable data, but a lot of it is out there. There's benefits to critical thinking. There's benefits to more civic engagement, to student leadership opportunities. The business community has long talked about more productive teamwork. We know that you increase your own self-awareness. You're better prepared as a professional, especially in healthcare, but on and on and on. So there are many, many ways that we can quantify it.
Travis Korpening from Cape Fear Community College. Earlier in the program, you touched on the notion that there are challenges facing some minority students that a white student might not be facing. Can you give us an example of what some of those challenges are and what some of the training is that you provide and the support that you provide to minority students?
Well, number one, to answer your question, some of the challenges that arise start from how we're wired as individuals. We're wired to interact with others based off of our experiences. And when you look at the media, when you look at, what's out there in terms of how we interact every day or what we see every day, what we're exposed to every day, a lot of, it's no secret that minority males are at the brunt of a lot of exposure in terms of being at the bottom. You're talking about, if you're talking about jail time, if you're talking about, test scores. So when you're exposed to that on a regular basis and don't have a personal experience with a minority male that is not in those situations, which there are quite a few, then what it does is it skews your personal, can skew your personal bias one way or the other. And so the result of that is when you interact with a minority male, you may have some bias, and that's not something that I was on recently. Give you an example. I was on a show called Diversity Matters where Denzel Washington was actually referred to by a young older woman, white woman, and she clutched her purse. He referred to her clutching her purse on the elevator when she was next to him. And this is Denzel Washington. So now, having personal experience with someone, can't guarantee that won't happen, but, is one of the avenues that could possibly turn that around.
So it's probably a safe speculation that Denzel Washington has a pretty healthy self-esteem, self-image. But what would that kind of body language do to another African-American man who might have been in the elevator with that woman?
Sure. It makes you feel as though, and I've had this conversation, it makes you feel as though there's something wrong with you. You don't fit. You know, you could just be doing any average thing that an average American, you know, would do on a day-to-day basis. But, you know, you're perceived as being, you know, an aggressor or someone that could be, you know, could cause harm to someone else. And that's not may not be the case. So it makes you feel as though you don't fit. And so what I try to do through the Nixon Minority Male Leaders Program is teach them that some of these biases are there, but don't use that as an excuse. You can't use that as an excuse. You have to figure out, you know, there's ways of teaching people, making people more aware that, you know, all minority males don't do these things. And that's what I try to do and train these students to understand through the Nixon Minority Male Leaders Program.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about diversity and inclusion on the campuses of local institutions of higher education. With us in the studio today are Kent Guyon, UNCW's first diversity officer, and Travis Korpening, director of the Nixon Male Minority Leaders at Cape Fear Community College. He also chairs CFCC's Diversity Committee. If you have a question or an observation about diversity on campus, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org, and you can tweet us using coastlinehqr. Travis Korpening, going back to that scenario in the elevator, you said that was an older white woman. Is part of the conversation around diversity and inclusion and greater understanding, is that partly generational?
I think it is. I think we are moving, you know, as a society, as you know, two individual, a university and two individual educational institutions moving in a positive direction. I think it is generational. I think one of the ways that we're going to change that is by those experiences, those personal experiences. If you have someone that you see every day and you interact with every day, no matter what age you are, that you know, is not the person that you see on, you know, the nightly news, then I think that does change your perception of, you know, the way you see that particular, whether it's race, whether it's LGBTQIA, whether it's, you know, whatever category they're in. So I think the personal experience is the way that we're going to change it. And I think it is generational, but that doesn't mean that it can't be addressed.
And according to 2013 Pew Research, as we mentioned in the intro, there's still a long way to go. Less than half of Americans would say that we are where we need to be on that front. Kent Guyon, when you talk with other staffers at UNCW, what are you hearing about the biggest challenges facing this campus and this community here along those lines?
You know, I think that there are a couple of different themes, specifically on campus, is this whole idea that we haven't had a coordinated, comprehensive effort. Therefore, the movement has been kind of slow and a bit more protracted than we would like. I think the broader community really sees some racial incidents from the past as really anchors to progress, and I think just in general a lack of leadership towards really wanting to move the community as a whole in a different direction. Those are some of the themes that I kind of hear, and again, I've only been here for a month, but I think those have been the ones that have kind of come through thus far.
When you're talking about events from the past that have impacted where we are today, which events are you talking about? Are you talking about things as well known as 1898, the coup d'etat that happened? Or are you talking about more individual kinds of interactions?
Sure. Primarily the large ones that have really profoundly impacted the community. The Wilmington 10 comes up, 1898 comes up, et cetera, and so on. And even recently, more of the the vision in school districts on test performance. That's something that has also come up. You know, even at, you know, grade level three, you start to see divides that, again, impact the entire community. We want to try to point fingers and really isolate the issue, but it's all of us. It's not just Wilmington, but the things that we do here impact North Carolina, and those impact the rest of the state. So, again, I think it's important to step up to the challenge and really see how we can improve our own circumstances to really make all of the circumstances better.
So now that you're Chief Diversity Officer and you've met Travis Corpening from Cape Fear Community College, are the two of you going to collaborate? What can the two campuses do together on this front?
Oh, we will absolutely collaborate.
Yeah, I think after today, I think that was definitely something that we have to make happen.
And in what ways will you collaborate? What are some of the things you can do as a team?
So at Georgia Regents, we actually had an African American male initiative that was funded at the state level and also funded by private contributors that looked at many of the not only social but academic elements to increase progression and graduation. So that was one of the, you know, the moment that I saw that as part of your portfolio, I wanted to be sure we touched base on some of the strategies there. I think, again, I believe that the community as a whole really has a vested stake in this. And thinking about a pipeline forward to the highest level, sometimes we talk about access and, we kind of have automatic access to K-12. Then access beyond that really is where we want to ensure we have policies and procedures in place to support, maintain all the way to the highest level so that the third graders who may be off track get on track and stay on track until they get PhDs. That's sort of what I see as the ultimate goal, and we have to connect with each other all along that pathway.
So you can't view the local institutions of higher education as discrete entities. You're looking at this as a community-wide initiative.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We're all in this together.
Yeah, I mean,
it's education from day one until the last day, in my opinion.
I think, and that might be not the end all be all solution, but that might be a big part of the solution is to definitely join hands and try to figure out what you can do as two institutions.
And so what are some – obviously, you've made the observation that schools, particularly in New Hanover County, this has been quantified by a study done at UNC, I believe it was Chapel Hill, that identified a very high percentage, more than 95% of schools, public schools in New Hanover County as high poverty schools had huge minority populations. And that's part of what you're talking about, Kent Guyon, when you're talking about third graders who aren't doing as well. There's a racial socioeconomic disparity.
That's correct. That's part of the greater narrative. I think that what's tough to do is to really connect all the dots and to really make it a circumstance that is ours. Who is the our? Because I think we want to isolate and point and single out incidents as opposed to thinking of it as our Wilmington. What Wilmington do we want for not only ourselves but for future generations, and really build around that as the goal. But it's comprehensive, and it really takes a lot of different voices at the table with commitment.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about inclusion and diversity on campuses. We're talking with Kent Guyon, UNCW's diversity officer, and Travis Corpening from CFCC's Nixon Male Minority Leaders Program about expanding diversity on campus and creating an environment that's welcoming to everyone. You can ask a question of our guests by calling 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. This is Coastline. Thank you.